All right. Welcome to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. My name is Derek Burrows. I'm here with Micah Jackson. What's going on, brother?
Oh, man. Another week. We've had beautiful, wonderful weather, man. You would have loved it. Outside, cool, clear, blue. Wonderful time in Houston. Hope it's a wonderful time where you are. Everyone out there in internet world, I know here in Houston, we're broadcasting with 100,000 watts of power across Lake Houston up there, down to Galveston and everywhere, thanks to KPFT every Friday at the 3 o'clock hour. So if you're listening in, please remember to support. Also, you can check it out at kpft.org. You were just listening to The Fails. What do you think about that song, Derek? What do you think about that song?
I think the audience enjoyed that song. There's a little talk of Puff Puff Pass, but I think it was a good, nice, old school punk song. And as you said, Mike, anybody who wants to find out more about the station we broadcast on can visit kpft.org. You can always go there and donate directly to the station to keep Houston's longest running commercial free, corporate free community radio station on air, including broadcasting shows like ours, Freethinker Radio, which we've been broadcasting for 10 years now, bringing you uncensored news and underground music. And if you want to find more about us, you can visit thehoustonfreethinkers.com, including for the archives where we post all the links to the stories that we cover, including everything that we're going to get into here in just a second. But let's we got some upcoming events. You said the weather's good, right, Micah? So I'm guessing
the weather's been good. Friday is going to be raining, but then I don't know what's happening. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, I see that we got some events coming up. There's all kinds of events going on in Houston. I know everybody knows how to find out about their events. But, you know, something off in the distance is next Friday, once we get past the rain, Ganesha and Black Cutlass is in from Austin. We'll be performing a free show at Red Dwarf. That's 1011 McGowan. If you want to get out and experience local music in that sort of environment, it's a, like I said, free show. That's a good thing. And what can get better than rock and roll with Ganesha and Black Cutlass in from Austin? So I also see there's a Gulf Coast Freedom Cell meetup coming up. Yep. April 24th.
Yeah, so last week we were telling you guys, those of you who are in Houston, about the Houston Freedom Cell meetup. I know they had a big successful meeting last week and got pretty organized, and they're doing great things. I mean, some of it, which is probably reserved for the activist circles, but they're, you know, getting their own servers set up so they can communicate with their own kind of private documents and email services, so they have a more private way to communicate, and as well as doing lots of gardening over at House of Jay on the east end of Houston that we've talked about, the importance of community gardening and all that. And a lot of that is what Freedom Cells is about. And so now, as the Freedom Cell movement is growing in Houston and really around the world, there are people who have formed the Gulf Coast Freedom Cell. And they're a little more located towards Lamarck, Texas, and Galveston, which KPFT does broadcast out there. So if you are in that area, you know anybody in the Houston, Galveston, Gulf Coast area, and they're interested in connecting with community, this is going to be April 24th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Carbide Park, 4102 Main Street. That's Carbide Park, 4102 Main Street in Lamarck, Texas. And of course, this information will be on the HoustonFreethinkers.com. So when you hear this and you want to get those details, you can go look that up. And they're going to be doing some introduction to what Freedom Cells are, discussing potential restrictions and things they might be facing. I think they mean in relation to COVID, and then solutions like that. So it's just cool to see this idea of really what we've been doing with the Houston Freethinkers since 2010, kind of taking on a more decentralized way of people just getting organized on a local level. And so even if you're listening, you're not from Houston, especially if you're listening, you're not from Houston, go check out freedomcells.org. You can join for free and search the maps, the member maps and cell maps, and find people organizing already in your communities doing lots of different things. So check that out. And yeah, I guess, you know what, Micah, for once we could start with a positive story for a change.
Is it positive, Derek? Is it? Are we talking about the solar co-op?
Yeah, I'm talking about the solar co-op. So let's go ahead and jump into this, because I think I would say it is a good story, both in the sense of it's positive news, but also something that for me is a little more philosophically aligned than it simply being like a government program. But this is coming from Houston Public Media, just reported this week. Houston launches citywide solar co-op, and it says the co-op model works by bringing a group of people together to lower solar installation fees. The city of Houston has launched a new citywide solar cooperative. So it is a city of Houston thing, but there's also this involvement of this nonprofit group, Solar United Neighbors. So it might be some public-private partnership type thing, which is definitely worrisome in the regards of the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum. But this cooperative, they're aiming to make more affordable for residents and business owners to install solar panels around the city. Again, the nonprofit is Solar United Neighbors, and they use a co-op model that works by bringing together a group of people in a similar geographic area that all want to go solar at the same time. And by grouping together, they can leverage those numbers to bring down the costs. The
co-op Freedom Cells? What?
Yes, solar cells. Yeah, there you go. That's a good use of a freedom cell, right? Coming together and saying, hey, let's come in on a group initiative to get as much solar panels as possible. So just for anybody who is interested in this, it says that this is open to business and homeowners in and around Houston. The nonprofit will request proposals from solar companies on behalf of the co-op, which will then choose one company to complete all the installations. It's a pretty interesting way to go about it. And it says that those who are interested have until July 31st to sign up. This is in Houston. There might be similar programs in other cities and other places. But I do think that, yeah, look, it says it's an initiative launched in part by the city. But it really seems like it's this nonprofit, Solar United Neighbors, that is doing the work. They're getting people together. And then they're going to put out proposals to various solar companies on behalf of, like, hey, we're representing all these different people, business owners, et cetera. What kind of deal can you get us? And then, you know, help distribute those benefits.
They can bulk buy, like, representing the group type thing. And that's good. I mean, we got to be able to move to a better, you know, way of living anyway. There's so much waste and such. Solar's really changed in the time. So if we can, if, you know, the panels have begun to produce so much more for the size, that's tremendous, not to mention everything else. So I'm glad we're taking that step. There's a lot of new construction going on. It seems like always a good time in Houston to plug into the newest thing that can make your building sounder, you know, make less of a footprint, et cetera. So yeah, that way we get to start on a positive note. That was pretty good.
And there's plenty of sun in Houston, so that's another benefit. And it's interesting not to go too off on a tangent as we cover some Texas news and broaden out to national and international. I'm actually getting close to getting a piece of land, Mike, out here in Mexico, like pretty close. There's definitely, like, I would say if things go well within the next month or so, we putting a deposit down and then hopefully having this land by the summer.
They will be partying down.
And then we'll be partying down here on the land of Mexico. But one of the considerations, of course, is like putting solar panels on there, because this area, I mean, you think of the natural resources. There's water on site, it's a stream, springs flowing, you know, just year round. There's wind, it's up in the mountains. There's lots of wind you could harvest that way. The stream itself, you know, we've seen small designs for like hydropower using old washer and dryers with the streams, you know, but then also there's the sun. There's just so much sun that if you harvest that sun in form of solar panels and store those in the energy banks, and then the wind, you use that in different ways, the water, you know what I mean? Like, my point is, it's just been on my mind of how important that is. So even in the city environment, it seems like if there's an opportunity to get solar panels and actually have some, if you do it right, you could put backup batteries and say like the next power grid goes down or whatever, you're banking, even if the sun's out, you still have backup batteries with power. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like, just feels like there's opportunity there. Now, this next story, Micah, I was doing a little research, looking around, like, what are we going to talk about for Houston? What's going on in Houston? I'm not in Houston, but still, my heart is there and I still care about what's going on there. And one thing before we get into this story, which is another story I found that is false and is out there, and it's on the Houston Chronicle website, but it's not accurate. I just happened to notice as I was looking around all the Houston area news websites that literally there are no COVID stories. There's no COVID stories at all. Like, you know, if you look at the media in many parts, like CNN and others, it's still being very much like, you know, hey, Michigan is doom and gloom. And there's, you know, the mayor and the folks are still trying to say, like, don't get too comfortable, even though Texas is masks orders open. I mean, it's over. Most things are open and things are going back to quote unquote normal. And the numbers are going down, and there's really no way for them to explain it using their models. But I just find that interesting that some of the media is pumping it up, but then at the same time, you look at local media and there's literally not a single story. It's just like COVID disappeared. So I don't know. I just think that's interesting to note. And maybe there's nothing to update us on today, right? But I mean, it seems like after a year of 24/7 COVID, there'd be something. And I don't know.
No doubt. Yeah, it's, you know, maybe we should just enjoy the peace.
Yeah, that's definitely one way. Just try to take peace with it. But I think it's also important, though, to really examine, I mean, without getting too lost, and to examine just how they push these certain narratives, including this next story, right?
Like, there's just a collapse of it when they're done, and there's no
it just over, like,
correcting any details, you know?
It just goes away all of a sudden, right? So this story, though, the one that we're looking at now is, again, coming from the Chronicle. This is the only story I could find that was even COVID-related, but it wasn't even really directly COVID-related.
They hate our freedoms.
It's in the travel section, the lifestyle section of the Chronicle, and it says Texans traveling to Mexico still not allowed to walk across the border. Texans can fly. You have to swim, yeah. Texans can fly but not walk between borders. So, of course, if you got to fly, that means you got to do a PCR test, get this thing jammed up your nose. If you go that route, do all this jumping through hoop stuff. And let me just read the couple of lines from this. It says, if you have your eyes set on a relaxing post-vaccine vacation to Mexico anytime soon, you'll have to stick to airline travel. Restrictions on non-essential land movement between the U.S. and Mexico border have been extended yet again as the pandemic continues despite a larger vaccinated population. It says this constraint, which has been in place since March 2020, bars non-essential land travel to and from each country and serves as another upset to business owners in South Texas who rely heavily on clientele from Mexico. Micah, as you know, this is absolutely a lie. This is not true. How many times have I come back and forth to Houston and Mexico in the last year?
You're not the only person that's managed to come back and forth.
No, I'm not doing anything special. I didn't swim across. I'm not bribing them at the border. They literally asked
a tunnel.
They asked no questions about COVID. There's no differences. We haven't had to no, we got to say we're there to see family so we can, you know, get special approval. There's just, it just doesn't exist. It's just, I don't know. I just find this really interesting, but unfortunately this is what is being put forward in most of the media. This is the message that if somebody, for example, doesn't know an individual like me or, you know, who's been traveling across Mexico or who lives in Mexico, who has been to the border, they would see this Chronicle story. Oh, the Chronicle, you can trust it. The thing is, this is the same thing it said for the last year. And that's what I'm saying is even just last month, the Biden administration sort of celebrated as they extended travel restrictions for walking and driving to the border. They're saying it's been 1 year since we closed things down. So if you look on the government website, it officially says that things are closed down, but clearly they're not. So I don't know. I just wanted to highlight that even on our local Houston paper, the Chronicle, and many, many other places, including the government's website, there are false
information. Look at the date on that story.
Yeah, that's just today. That's just today as we are having the show that this information is coming out. So that's the latest information that somebody reading the Chronicle, the largest paper in the city of Houston, the fourth largest city in the country, in the lifestyle travel section, we'll see that. How many people are going to cancel their plans? Oh, I thought I could go to Mexico this summer.
Actually,
but no.
A number, and like they said, a number of business people. I've seen this with business both to Canada and to Mexico. So that's a truth. People don't know, and they are not going to go find out, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's just, I think that's another example of people that most people would probably just trust whatever they read on the government website. Of course, it's the official government website, et cetera. But it just shows you another example of how that if it's repeated on TV, some people won't bother asking questions. So people won't go look and find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to think for yourself for sure. And question these narratives. I think that's the best thing about a news analysis aspect of the show. You know, we get to look into these things, and obviously that bears some boots on the ground of going back and forth to Mexico, as you have done. So yeah, I think that's interesting, and it's hard to know what to believe when you see these things in papers, from the Chronicle to everything else, you know. And it's disheartening in a way. Nonetheless, I got this story here that I thought we'd get into real quick, where the Oklahoma governor signs a bill protecting drivers who strike protesters while fleeing. I was like, that headline just got me, okay? I'm like, what the heck are they doing? So it puts the Oklahoma legislature put forth this bill, and they said they aimed at cracking down on protests. Why? Why is the government cracking down on protests? I thought that was a right, you know what I mean? But anyway, whether you think protesting is right or not, this bill was passed in Oklahoma, and so you can be protected if you strike protesters when you are fleeing. So it was inspired by a May incident, a truck pulling a horse trailer. You may have seen it in the news. It was kind of used for a moment there as a meme or whatever you want to call it. It became surrounded by Black Lives Matter protesters on intersection 244 in Tulsa. In a bid to escape, the driver forced his vehicle through the crowds of people, sending two of them to the hospital. Some have questioned how exactly the incident could trigger this law, especially because no charges were ever filed against the driver. So, you know, that's kind of strange. And also, in addition to that, just in the ways of this state of Oklahoma there, new legislation did pass on Wednesday that prevents Oklahomans from willfully disrupting government business during local public meetings. Thought that kind of already had something in there, Derek, already that was a law, but I guess they got to have another one. And also this one, this is the catcher that I really wanted to hit also. It also bans people from publishing personal information about anyone, law enforcement officers, public officials, you know, elected people with the intent. Okay, so intent matters, right? With the intent to threaten, intimidate, or harass. A practice known as doxing. So no doxing in Oklahoma, no disrupting public meetings, but you kind of get protected if you strike protesters while fleeing a riot. And I don't know what it takes to be declared a riot. Like, who's the official that comes in, like the weatherman or the geologist or whatever it might be, and certifies this as an actual riot? Who's that?
You know, I think this issue is interesting, Mike, because I don't even, it's weird to me that there's been like even an increase in these kinds of laws that they've had to happen. And this is, of course, going back to 2016 in Charlottesville when somebody, you know, used the car to wreck, you know, crash into the activist and killed her. And so it's, and there have been like definitely videos of people running over activists in the streets. And then, you know, we could go back and forth to other people like, yeah, well, they're blocking the streets. And, you know, and it's I don't know, maybe it's not always a black and white issue per se, but it definitely seems like people shouldn't just be running over activists in the streets. And I also am of the mind, while I'm not maybe always going to agree with people's issues and the tactics they use, I am of the mind that just kind of generally, like when we're speaking about this, like why would activists be in the streets, protesters be in the streets where somebody might accidentally or purposely run over them at whatever the situation may be. But that sometimes I feel like, and we've seen this over the last 10 years, Micah, going back to, you know, the kind of Ron Paul libertarian movement, the Occupy movement, and what came after that, this civil disobedience in different ways, that sometimes you just got to shut things down. I mean, that's just my approach, is that like sometimes I think that really, and maybe we're not, maybe don't agree on every issue that people choose to take this tactic, but when you feel like your back's up against the wall, sometimes it might feel like the only, you know, move you got is to make people uncomfortable or to disrupt, you know, business as usual to get people's attention.
I read about a group that did something like this. They went and they blocked access during a peak inflationary money printing period to local Federal Reserve branch bank. I heard about a group that did that. Nonetheless.
I think I remember that. Yeah. But you know what I mean? I just wanted to make that point that this, it's interesting that these bills are even an issue because of that, because more people are getting in the streets and things of that sort. Let's move forward, guys.
You're listening. They said it was inspired, or they were trying to curb protest. I mean, it's one thing to try to protect lives,
exactly.
People are threatened, and I don't know, people might remember Reginald Dennis back in the Rodney King time. He was a trucker who was pulled out and beaten. So, I mean, there are these instances that occur in you know, acts of the public enemy or whatever you want to say, where chaos has ensued and people just are hurting people. And so, yeah, I do think if you had children, you'd have to protect them more as far as just to give that side something. But I think you already would be, you know. So at best, it seems a bit redundant.
So what's going on with DC now? Were you listening to Freethinker Radio? We're covering a few different stories today. We're going to be covering vaccine hesitancy shortly. We're going to be talking some international news, some things going on in Mexico and other parts of the world. Robot dogs is coming up next. And we try to bring you uncensored news, underground music. We're going to play some more music shortly. And that's what we do here on Freethinker Radio every week on 90.1 KPFT.org. You can visit KPFT.org to find out more, or our site, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Let's get into it briefly, Michael. What's the whole DC 51st state about? I know there's people like on the Republican side saying, oh, this is just an attempt to get Democratic stronghold and empower the left and things of that sort. And I'm sure there's other takes on it, but
I think we need to, you know, we're still a ways from it happening. So I think there's time for reflection to really answer that question. And I'd like to just ravel out a couple of the nuts and bolts to the story. But I think there's a lot of questions about representation here. You know what I mean? And also what it means to be a state in that federal complex, for what it's worth, you know, in the nation state of United States, the Federal Republic of America, whatever you think this empire is. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, it turns out that the U.S. Passed legislation Thursday, which would give statehood to Washington, D.C., making it the 51st in the U.S. H.R. 51, aptly named, passed the House 216 to 208. So that's not an overwhelming majority. The bill would designate Washington Douglas Commonwealth as the 51st state while still having a separate federal district. And I think there's a lot of details to get into this, and I think we will in upcoming episodes. But the one thing you did mention is, yeah, there's a lot of people saying that, yes, this, then Puerto Rico, and once they stop the filibuster, it'll be, you know, Democrats in the Senate forever. And, you know, what does statehood mean? What does it mean to admit another state into this union at this point? And whether you agree with the government or not, I think that if you were born in America, you've got a right to say and think something about that and probably even express something about that somehow. So I'm not sure what I think about it. I think it's a very complex issue, but I do believe that, you know, for a long time, they wanted this area not to be a state. They, you know, and that goes back to the reasoning that they had at the time. And that's something I think we could spend 20 minutes on at least. And for the most part, though, it boils down to, you know, no state having that power, the power of the federal government there within it.
Well, I appreciate that breakdown, Mike. Yeah, like, I'm not that informed on the situation other than the sort of generic points that I, you know, pointed to earlier. But I do know that it'll probably continue to be a important issue, especially, like you said, we're not there yet. It hasn't gone. This isn't like officially happening yet. But if it does progress, then, which it seems like there's going to be a fight for it, then
you also got these questions about these smaller states, you know, with small populations and such, and, you know, what that means to the bodies such as the Senate and the House when you add these representatives, you know. So maybe the people who live in the most populous state have they have more people in the House, right? But they still have the same number of senators. So those sort of questions arise, and people, you know, power always has to assert itself back and forth in different ways. But in the end, the question is, are the people of D.C. aptly represented by their government? You know?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, let's move forward as we leave the audience with that question. Of course, anybody who ever wants to send in comments, you can find us on Facebook. But if you want to get outside of Facebook, Freethinker Radio is, you can find our shows on BitChute and Odyssey or at theconsciousresistance.com. And as I mentioned earlier, thethinkers.com. Okay, the aforementioned robot dogs. Let's get into it. This has been a long time coming, Michael. Sad to say, this one has been on the horizon. I know that we've probably covered it back when the first, the Boston Dynamics videos over with MIT when they were developing these sort of robot dog technology years ago, and they were calling it Spot. You remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. Now we're at New York Police Department DigiDog robot raising questions among New Yorkers. This is just from the last week or so. And it's a robot shaped like a dog, they say. And they just kind of share a story here. Monday afternoon on 28th Street, cops responded to a man barricaded after a domestic dispute. And they sent in this robot dog to, you know, defuse the situation. And they said, now we have robot dogs in the streets. This is one of the representatives saying they've got military gear and now they've got robot dogs in the street, further oppressing us with robots now. And so, again, this was made by Boston Dynamics. It's the same dog that we saw years ago. And some of you, I don't have the clip in front of me, but some of you might have seen floating around the internet in recent weeks this creepy clip of like the Chinese military with like a whole factory of these Digi dogs, Spot, with robot dogs, and they're doing push-ups. Yeah, like they're doing push-ups to the sound of like the song that plays whenever Darth Vader walks out, and it's just, you know, yeah, pretty creepy. And then, you know, just to kind of cap that off, I found this one, Mike. I was trying to remember this earlier. There, I was like, I know there's a story related to the Saudis. This is the one, the creator of NYPD's horrifying robot police dog linked to Saudi Crown Prince MBS, the founder of the company that made the NYPD's robo dog, was announced as an advisor to the Saudi Crown Prince and his futuristic mega city project.
That's an ugly dog.
Yeah, these don't look like friendly dogs. So again, the man behind the company who created NYPD's $75,000 robot police dog, which was spotted in action just last week, was recruited to serve as an advisor to the despotic, tyrannical, I would say authoritarian Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is also the Salman family's friends with the Bushes and other, of course, all the presidents rub shoulders with them and hang out with them and give them what I think the Trump administration and now the Biden administration continuing have given them.
It's the ring.
Millions of dollars funding, you know, genocides in Yemen and all these great things. But yeah, so
we'll get into that later.
Yeah, there's the connections to that as well. So just wanted to throw that out there. Robot dog in New York is on the streets. They're saying it's still in testing mode, but they've also said they've been testing it for 4 years and that we've seen it actively on the streets. And I will remind people, because I know we covered it at that point. Last year it was first announced that there was this sort of robot dog being used in Singapore to help enforce social distancing. And it had like a little speaker on it to say like, please step back 2 feet or whatever. You know, it just like was talking to people, like really scary stuff.
It's like a robot border collie.
Yeah, it's not going to be something that I'm looking forward to.
I wonder if you can just wear jammers that make them just retarded, you know? Like,
you know, I don't know how, if this is going to sound crazy or extreme to some people, but dude, I honestly have been thinking that we need to invest in any sort of, and you know, a forward thinking person needs to invest in
and
EMP technology. Like, you know, like you said, you have to have some kind of device that could block or scatter like the inner workings of one of those devices. Otherwise, like, yeah, that's scary. I mean, if you're getting, I can't imagine you having to be chased down the street because you're not wearing a mask, you don't have your vaccine passport, and they send out the robot dogs. The robot dogs with lasers that shoot lasers and shoot vaccines out of them. Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right. It's time for a music break. Let's take a quick music break. Any suggestions, Micah, from our catalog here? Anything you can think of? If not, I'm going to drop my song again.
Why not? Let's hear that again.
Okay, brand new song for me, 33, Reflection. You're listening to Freethinker Radio. We'll be back in 3 minutes with more news. We're going to talk vaccine hesitancy, so please stay tuned.
We have to reestablish our identity.
33.
We have to understand who we are and where we fit in the natural order of the world.
It's time to reflect.
The people who have created this system, and they perpetuate this system, they are out of balance.
So let's do this.
They have made us out of balance.
I woke up this morning feeling I had something to say. I got doubts on my mind. It's time to let them fly away. It's time to unlearn poison and heal broken hearts. Go back to the end. It's time for a fresh start. This is the place we can atone for our sins. This is the place where our hero's journey begins. A space between love and hate, where there's no escape from our fate. Rather than be irate, let's create. Let's build the better world we know is possible. I've got no fear, cause we can overcome any obstacle. I stare all my demons in the face, I'll show you what's possible. I send love from my heart, I'm intuitive, not illogical. It's just that lately I've been searching for deeper meaning. I'm sick of drugs, booze, mindless sex, and criminal scheming. Feels like I should have more at this point in time. I'm talking knowledge, not money, I'm trying to feed my mind.
See, we are power.
To your ears. Let's make a difference. Let's do something. Open up all three of my eyes and fly to the heavens. During my meditation, I see my life in chapters of seven. I connect to my inner child to heal my wounds. I remember those I've lost to dope gone too soon. My life flashes before me, a collage of joy and pain. I recall the highs, the lows, I swear I'm going insane. I'm trying to wrap my mind around this journey. Spent too much time worrying about things that don't concern me. No more time wasted. exhausted, not chasing my dreams. I wake up every day knowing this world ain't what it seems. We gotta find our own path, we gotta make our own meaning, cause we can't be sure.
Might be dreaming.
All I know is when I look in your eyes, I see myself. I'm just a reflection of your impression of my higher self. Could it be that our whole reason for being, our existence, is a lesson to teach us over and over until we get this? You are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Shake off your chains, you are blind, but now you see. Grandfather, help us remember where we come from. Grandmother, walk with us until this battle is won. Just here to remind you to give thanks where you come from. Think about where you're headed. 33, out.
We are a natural part of the earth. We are an extension of that natural energy which is spirit and which is power. That is natural power. And just as it takes millions and billions of elements to make a blizzard to happen, or to make the earthquake, to make the earth to move, then it's going to take millions and billions of us. We are power. We have that power.
You are powerful. You are beautiful. You are free.
All right. Welcome back to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm Derek Bros. I'm here with Micah. We're going to continue discussing news that you don't really hear too much in the mainstream. And even these days on the internet, there's so much being censored and deleted and, you know, forgotten about and downranked in the social media searches and Google searches. It's difficult to find this information.
On that note, I really want to thank everybody for being involved that has supported us over the decade. We've done this show in different forms, and especially now, it's really a crucial time now. Always it feels like we're there, but no, it's that case. And another thing I want to shout out real quick is enjoyed both the fails and your music. It was good hearing it again. I heard it in the car last Friday, by the way. I'm like, I hear this song again. I know these words. Anybody who wants their music or has friends' music that wants to be played on this station, reach out to us or email music@visionarynoise.com. We'll look at getting things on here. I know that when we started also live streaming, things changed a little bit with the music, but we're always happy to get the music out. It's part of, you know, being free, being creative, and doing something in the face of the machine. So thank you, Derek, for creating and being a part of that always.
Yeah, thank you, man. And yeah, you're right. That's always been a big part of Freethinker Radio, and what we try to do here is not just be another kind of talk show per se, but bring you music, bring you important information. And again, thanks to KPFT for letting us do it. So the next story that I want to cover is going to lead into sort of a section on COVID. Micah, of course, we got to talk. There's some later things going on. Like, we're going to get to vaccine hesitancy in a moment. But the one announcement that I want to talk about and kind of give some background on relates to this this call for a COVID commission, that there's going to be a broad COVID commission planning group that will be based at the University of Virginia. And this was announced last week by the University of Virginia in one of their press releases. And it says the COVID-19 pandemic ranks as a singular mass trauma suffered by humanity during the last 100 years. And to respond to this, more than two dozen of the nation's most accomplished virologists, public health experts, clinicians, and former officials, joined by four of America's leading charitable foundations from across the political spectrum, are laying the groundwork to discover and preserve the lessons of COVID-19 crisis. So they have formed, these virologists, health experts, and charitable foundations, the COVID Commission Planning Group. So that is important to note. This is not a government thing at the moment, but it's kind of being like the private sector, as they're claiming it, and the nonprofit sector. And it's based at University of Virginia's Miller Center for Public Affairs, led by University of Virginia Professor Philip Zelikow, who some people will remember is the former executive director of the 9/11 Commission. And again, this is being celebrated all over the place. I do want to mention who is involved in the planning of this group before I give you the why it's important of who this guy is. It's being funded by the Schmidt Futures Organization, and I wonder if that's Eric Schmidt of Google. I believe so. The Skoll Foundation, connected to eBay and that money. The Rockefeller Foundation and Stand Together. It's also working with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, which was involved in Event 201 and a lot of other COVID-related things. But this name, Philip Zelikow, former executive director of the 9/11 Commission. I just want to read a couple of lines here. The, most of what I'm reading here, it's all publicly available information, but I cribbed this from James Corbett, the Corbett Report. He did an episode years ago about 9/11 and the various people who seem to have been involved in keeping the public fully informed, let's say. And that series is called 9/11 Suspects, and he has an episode about Philip Zelikow. And so this idea, let's talk a little bit about the fact that he was involved in the 9/11 Commission. And there are many people, even in the mainstream, admitting at the time that say that the 9/11 Commission was set up to fail and Zelikow was directly, and he was the head of it. He reportedly had 81 staffers that were under his, you know, working with him. But in reality, there was less than that. And most of them were all hired by him and under his control. Zelikow took over the hiring of the commission staff and even stopped staffers from communicating directly with the commissioners themselves. He made sure that he was the only one communicating with everyone. In the first few months, the 9/11 commissioners rarely even visited the commission because Zelikow denied them in their own offices and did not give them the ability to hire their own staffers as well. And after the victims' family members discovered that Philip Zelikow himself had links to the Bush administration, he was forced to recuse himself from the proceedings of the commission, which he was directing. And basically, he was involved in the Bush transition team, the National Security Council, and so people weren't seeing him as very much, you know, as a independent party. Former counterterrorism czar Richard Clark, who was part of the Bush administration, it was quoted as saying that the fix is in, and saying, quote, could anyone have a more obvious conflict of interest than Zelikow? Key staffers and even one of the commissioners threatened to quit the commission when they learned of his history. And this is a more interesting part, I think, in relation to COVID and, well, 9/11, but everything we're dealing with. And just to understand the background of the man that is now going to lead this COVID truth commission, essentially. And back in the day, Mike, in 1998, he wrote an article for Foreign Affairs. And some people might be aware that Foreign Affairs, that journal, is the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, often known as or kind of referred to as one of the ruling class of the United States. And in this 1998 article he wrote called Catastrophic Terrorism, Tackling the New Danger, he, along with some other authors, asked the readers to imagine a catastrophic act of terrorism. They even mentioned the World Trade Center and said, quote, like Pearl Harbor, the event would divide our past and a future into a before and after. The United States might respond with draconian measures, scaling back civil liberties, allowing wider surveillance of citizens, detention of suspects, and use of deadly force. More violence could follow, either future terrorist attacks or U.S. counterattacks. Belatedly, Americans would judge their leaders negligent for not addressing terrorism more urgently. But the really important part is that he goes on to discuss what he calls the public myth and how you can create and manage the public myth. And he says that these myths are generational and that are, quote, formed by these pivotal events that become etched in the mind of those who live through them. And he says this includes the New Deal in 1933. This is, again, written 3 years before 9/11, before he was associated with the Bush administration and becomes head of the 9/11 Commission. And so I just think that in the context of COVID, 9/11, everything else we know, it's interesting that this dude is being appointed to this COVID planning commission, which, again, it's being organized by the university and some nonprofits, Rockefeller Commission. So it's not technically a government thing, but still it's going to have some impact and influence, and whatever conclusions they draw is going to be, it'll be paid attention to by people in the mainstream. So I know I said there a lot, Micah, before we move on. What do you think about that whole thing and just the involvement of this character?
My goodness. You said a few, you know, my mind is strange, but I tell you what. First off, you led off by telling us that they're saying it's the singular most traumatic event on the public consciousness in the last 100 years. I feel like that's a huge claim to start with. I mean, I haven't done the math real quick. But we've been through a lot of stuff since the end of World War I. But, you know, there's that. And let's move on to this guy now. This guy, you said something there about informing the public. You know, informing the public, forming in the public what they need to think. I mean, I'm just like this guy, you know. And you also said, like, he would lead the Commission on Truth. I'm like, what? The Truth Commission, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this is like a, and he's going to, like, I feel like even if the little minions under him wanted to get something to anybody, once you said it went through him, you got that whole bottleneck right there. He could decide how to tell the senator or not tell the senator, how to tell or not tell the investigator, and whether they went to lunch that day or not, you know. And meanwhile, everybody's getting paid a whole bunch. And you said, this isn't a government thing. I thought that University of Virginia was a government thing, actually. But you know what I'm saying? You see what I mean? It's kind of a bizarre world is what Marianne Martinez has down here. And when you get into that, things like this happen. And one thing I will say is we talked early on that this may go to something like the Terror Watch alert, where the color chant, you remember how we had to go through all the colors forever? That we'd have some residual stuff going on for a decade, you know, long enough to inform in the public.
Yeah. Yeah, form what they want in the public's minds. Yeah, and I mean, I just don't see how anybody critically thinking person could just see that and like, that's not odd. This guy who writes about shaping public myths and how important it is to have a generational public myth, and here we are, and he gets to shape the public myth of what we're going to remember about in COVID in 50 years, 20 years, 10 years, right now, you know. All right. Well, you're listening to Freethinker Radio here on 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. Micah, this next little five batch of stories, I'm just going to hit the headlines real quick, but you'll see the theme here. We're talking vaccine hesitancy as the vaccine passport issue that we've continued to talk about is becoming more and more of a reality. Let's just get into this. I'll share a few of these headlines. They're going all over the country. I mean, this is basically what I like about this is a stream of headlines about vaccine hesitancy from different parts of the U.S., like very different parts. This is L.A. County. That's a big city. L.A. County takes on vaccine hesitancy as officials say that 80% vaccination required for herd immunity. That's a pretty big number. But it's basically saying that the county's public health director is saying that she sees a series of statistics that she is hoping will ease the fears of people who may remain hesitant to get vaccines. And she says that the numbers are going up, but they need to, you know, get more and more people. And now as the numbers increase, the issue of vaccine hesitancy is becoming a larger issue. The county director says that she noted that prior to vaccines, roughly one in every 10 county residents were infected with COVID, according to them, and that now that has shrunk to one in every 13,000. And so the risk of COVID is going down, even they're admitting. And so they're saying because of this, people are being hesitant. Some of the reasons people are hesitant include fearing possible side effects. So that's going on in LA County. They're saying they need to get 80% people, and how do they do that with vaccine hesitancy? Then we got this one, how Wyoming became the most vaccine hesitant state. And it's just saying that according to a new U.S. Census Bureau survey conducted from October to March, that it's showing that Wyoming has about 33% of adults that say they were reluctant to get the COVID vaccine compared to an estimated 16% average nationwide. And they're saying that counties with the highest estimated hesitancy tend to be younger, poorer, and more likely to have been won by former President Donald Trump. So, of course, these are just poor, young, dumb Trump supporters that, like, that's just kind of the message.
They can't know anything or have an opinion that matters. So, right or secondary, et cetera. And, you know, there's people so stupid that really want to remove us from there for saying that.
They're so stupid and poor, and they like Trump. Oh, God, what a bunch of anti-science. Anyway, so it goes on to say vaccine hesitancy estimates
stab
in Wyoming.
Them. Stab them. Hold them down.
Got to give them a jab. The neighboring states, including Montana, North Dakota, and Idaho, roughly a quarter of residents were reluctant to get vaccine. So they're saying like it's a cluster, Montana, North Dakota, and Idaho. The top three reasons for vaccine hesitancy in Wyoming are concerned about side effects, I don't believe I need it, and I don't trust the vaccines, according to that data. So LA County saying they need 80% of people, Wyoming becoming the most vaccine hesitant state. And in this other report I got from Pittsburgh CBS talking about how the doctors there are focused on how they can convince people in rural areas. So again, there's a lot of focus on that. This CEO and president of Mon Valley Hospital basically saying that he would, quote, use every source possible to encourage people to get vaccines. It's that important. And he said the hospital is doing what it can to convince people that it's crucial to get it, to get to herd immunity. We're out, as you noted, with electronic billboards, and we've partnered with healthcare system and Chamber of Commerce.
That's
we have ads.
The minds.
We have op-eds, ads, and of course, social media. They're even distributing flyers to local doctor's offices with step-by-step instructions on how to schedule an appointment. So, you know, it just shows like there's really an information battle war going on, if you will, to try to convince people to take the vaccine and to get these numbers, which leads into this next story. This was just announced as, you know, this we're recording this. The Biden administration to use celebrities, athletes in a campaign to combat COVID vaccine hesitancy. And this has been going on already. I mean, how many?
Don't be hesitant. Take a firm stance.
Look, your favorite sports ball player is getting the vaccine. Look, your favorite MTV star is getting the vaccine.
I really care to, but I mean, let's just get on this hesitancy thing. There's no hesitancy here.
Some of us aren't hesitant. We already have our minds made up. But, you know, this is obviously like now it's an official announcement. So that's what I think is interesting, because this has already unofficially been going on where, you know, we've seen lots of these different folks like Dolly Parton and Gandalf and just all these other celebrities going out there. Look at me getting the thing. But this is now an official campaign with the U.S. government and these celebrities. It's called We Can Do This Live. And it'll target young people through social media and will include virtual events where celebrities and athletes answer Americans' lingering questions about the vaccine. So they're going to play like friendly, like, hey, what's up, guys? We know some of y'all still have questions, but don't worry. We're here to explain it all away. Come hang out with Mark Cuban and Kelly Ripa and Ryan Seacrest and your favorite people from the NASCAR, NWBA.
That's good science. You come on, yeah. That's good science right there.
So according to a detailed release of the campaign obtained by NBC, it says the goal is to reach Americans, particularly young people, directly in places where they already consume content, including social media, podcasts, YouTube, and more. And I will say, like, again, this has already been going on. They had this thing where it was called Pass the Mic, and I may have mentioned this on a show before, but it was all these celebrities, and they're basically saying, you know, it's COVID. It's an important time to pay attention to the scientists and the doctors. So instead of listening to me, we're going to pass the mic, and I'm going to be Julia Roberts interviewing Fauci and, you know, just all these sort of cringe things. But this is a marketing campaign. This is what it is. And it's a public-private partnership for marketing campaign to convince the people to, you know, get vaccinated. And I want to mention that what we covered
I saw some of these vaccines, you got to keep getting updated. Like you got to keep getting updated.
Booster
like,
shots.
Like you forever on the drip. Anyway.
Yeah, it's not going to be one vaccine, but I want to remind people that we've covered this as well in the past when talking about Event 201, that Event 201 part of their strategy and that simulation exercise, which involved John Hopkins University, which was also involved in that effort we were just talking about a moment ago, and the Gates Foundation and others, that when they simulated what they would do during some sort of pandemic, they also discussed using influencers to convince the public to go along with it. So we're seeing it right here. Whatever you think about Event 201, I'm not saying that means it was whatever. I'm just saying they simulated that, and here's real life. One more, Micah, in this vein, and then we'll just – I think we got to probably start to wrap up soonish. But this is an opinion piece from the Washington Post. Opinion: to beat back vaccine hesitancy, start with churches. And it basically just goes into some new survey information from the Public Region Research Institute saying that, you know, people are more likely to take vaccines if it comes from their church and in their church leaders, the people that they trust. This is something that the COVID Action Platform, which was developed by the Rockefeller Foundation, I'm showing real quick for those who want to just check that out on my website. I did this August 2020. Here's how they will convince you to take the COVID vaccine, going through some of these, a Yale University study and some others describing how they were going to do this. They were going to try to, like, we need to get to the celebrities. We need to get to the pastors and the local community officials, the people that they trust.
We saw this approach before too, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. This isn't new. I mean, well, let's talk about that, Micah. Let's give some other, if you have any off the top of your mind, like some other examples of where getting the local trusted officials on board to convince people to go along with various agendas.
You know, offhand, I'd love to go do the research quickly and have it. But I do remember us talking about this and seeing it in the buzz, in the feed around, you know, all the changes we saw in 9/11 and basically the tracking of individuals, the upstart of that, and, you know, how to get people to go along with the first say something, you know, see something, say something, and the monitoring everybody. It was about getting that program out, you know, if I remember correctly. It was about around the time of, you know, that whole change last time with the Patriot Act and all this. Now, what it was bottled up in, I don't remember exactly quickly, but I do think it's worth the research.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like, this is just to even acknowledge that this is a tactic of, well, for one, to really take in that what we're witnessing is a marketing strategy. Like I was saying, like, this is okay, we've got vaccine hesitancy in these areas. We've got vaccine hesitancy in the areas. All these officials are saying we're going to have to, you know, for one, they changed herd immunity. It only means if you're vaccinated. It doesn't mean natural herd immunity. You can only get that apparently with 80% vaccinated people. So there's that number they're borrowing. And they've even said, I've heard Fauci one time say maybe 90%, right?
So without pharmaceutical companies, nothing would ever have herd immunity, is what you're telling me.
You don't have an immune system, apparently. They've changed. I mean, like literally, we're watching the definitions be changed right in front of our eyes. I mean, that's what's really scary. So it's a marketing strategy.
Then they can keep you living forever.
Exactly. And like you said earlier, the booster shots, it's not just a one-time shot. They've already admitted that. But then also on top of the agenda, the marketing strategy, also this getting into the communities to convince each other. And I've documented this in Houston. The mayor is focusing on going to the poor black and brown communities, those community centers, and hosting these free vaccine shot things and really promoting it there. And we need to make sure that our people don't get left behind and really trying to sell it like that, like step up, you know, and even like the making it an equity issue, like, oh, the only people getting the vaccines are the white people. So like we should, you know, it's like almost trying to create this in the mind, this incentive or this desire to want, you know, to be like, well, maybe I want that vaccine. Why am I not getting the vaccine? You know,
I don't want to get sick.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's interesting.
It's an extremely personal decision, and it's hard for an individualistic philosophy nation like America for everyone to just take that pill like that. I really believe there's going to be, you know, for different reasons. You know, so I think it's a difficult situation and probably one of the most difficult we've had to really face.
Absolutely. We're down to just about 5 minutes, Micah, and I want to hit both the stories that we have. I got one about Mexico, and I know you wanted to mention this Ramadan and Yemen. I kind of touched on that briefly with Saudi Arabia. So let's get into this real quick, guys. Here at Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. So I just want to make note. I didn't mention this last week. I was a little busy, but last week when we did our show on the 15th was the 10th anniversary of an uprising that took place about an hour and a half from where I live in Mexico, in Morelia, Mexico. The town is called Cheran, Mexico, and in Michoacan. And 10 years ago, April 15th, 2011, they had an uprising. And this was not like, you know, some of the people maybe in the U.S. and elsewhere dream of, like they all are anarchists or libertarians or voluntarists or activists, whatever you want to say. And they had a philosophy that guided them and they chose to rebel against the government. This was an uprising based on survival. The Purépecha people that live out in that area and the people of Cheran, they are largely indigenous and they have had their own customs except for the last 40 years. The political parties of the national kind of political scene came on into their community, and over time they started to get divided. This is, you know, according to their own words. And then they had corrupt cartels. As many people know, there are some parts of the country. Mexico is very free in a lot of ways. Some ways that some people might see as like dangerous, which is definitely an aspect of that, but it's sort of this dangerous freedom. There are some parts of the country, maybe you don't drive around if you don't know, but generally you mind your own business and you live your life and you're fine. But they were doing that. They were minding their own business when these cartels started to partner with loggers and corrupt politicians and log the forest that is not only essential to their survival because of the resources it provides, but it's a sacred forest to them and to their people, and they have a sacred spring. And all of that was starting to be affected by the logging and everything that was taking place. And basically, after the forest was about 3/4 log, the water, the springs were starting to dry up because of the effect on it. Then you also had people who were being kidnapped and were going missing. And I'm going to start to wrap this up. I just wanted to make note of this for people who've never heard about this. I just put out a mini documentary about it. But people started to disappear in their community. And basically, they came down to saying, you know what, if we don't do something, they're going to kill us. They literally said that we're going to come for your women next. And long story short, the women started this movement, just like in many other places. 13 women decided to block these trucks. And that led to kind of a shootout. And Michael, like I said, it wasn't like a planned philosophical uprising. It was just like these things got set into motion. Some guy got shot in the eye. The people, you know, came in. They rounded up all the guys. They threw rocks and sticks at them and grabbed their weapons because, of course, guns are mostly illegal. You can own guns in Mexico, but it's highly controlled and you know, regulated. But obviously, the criminals still own guns. And so the people had to come together. And in a really beautiful story, they rebelled. And it was a process, of course. They had to decide that they want to do vigilante justice. They almost hung these guys from the tree. Ultimately, they decided to let them go. But they decided to go back to their pre political traditions to their indigenous traditions, because again, they said the political parties divided them, and they are now celebrating 10 years, man. Political parties are banned. They have been recognized as autonomous region by the federal government. And so no state cops or local cops can go there other than their own community volunteer force that they call La Ronda. And they have one of the lowest crime rates in all of Mexico. And I mean, not to say it's a perfect situation or anything, but it's a beautiful situation. Anybody who wants to learn more about this can visit theconsciousresistance.com. I put out a mini documentary. It's 20 minutes long, called Ni Un Paso Atrás, The Story of Cheran, Mexico. And what that means is not one step back. And that was kind of their, to me, really inspiring like motto. You know, when they were fighting at MICA and they had to like block the barricades and do their thing, it was very spontaneous, and that was their kind of motto, not one step back, just like we got to keep pushing, you know. And it's a beautiful story. So if anybody wants to learn just a little bit about that history of Mexico, theconsciousresistance.com, check it out.
That's no doubt, no doubt. It looks like we're really not going to have time. We're down to the last 2 minutes. I'm going to try to cover some of this. The basic of it, I do understand. Ramadan brings no relief for Yemen as Saudis block charities and Turk unleash foreign mercenaries. The headline says it all. The kingdom has ramped up efforts during Ramadan to stem the tide of charitable giving under pretext. Basically, they took over all the aid and only gives it to the sections that they control. And then to make matters worse, they also banned all these Yemeni patriots, expatriates from coming back to visit their family and bring the money that they earned while working in Saudi Arabia. So even the Geneva-based civil rights organization, SAM, says that they're, you know, upset that because Saudi authorities have been blackmailing families detailed at the border, forcing them to sell their SUVs for pennies on the dollar before they can reunite with their families. Meanwhile, Turkey's hiring rebels to, or hiring fighters to go in and be mercenaries there. So, yeah, people are also saying with the $23 billion weapon sales to the UAE that President Joe's pledge, harkening back to a February 4th address where he announced an end to the U.S. support for the war in Yemen, has been broken. So I think I did it. Wow.
Yeah, I think I'm glad we got that story in there. Again, all the links, guys, of everything we covered tonight can be found at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Visit our website. You can see our archives. I've been cutting up clips of the show, shorter samples of the shows. If you want to share these with friends, guys, this is what keeps us on air. And again, if you ever want to donate, contribute to KPFT, call KPFT or visit kpft.org. Make a donation in the name of Freethinker Radio so they know that you, the listeners out there, appreciate uncensored news, underground music, and a way that nobody else does on the Houston airwaves. And maybe nobody else does on the interwebs as well.
Man, but, and you mentioned something earlier, 40 years as commercial free, uncontrolled, listener supported, you know, wouldn't be here without y'all, KPFT. So they've been hosting us, and we're thankful to be part of their family. So props to them. Always loved working with you, Derek. Thanks to the crowd out there who supports.
Yeah. Until next time, guys, remember, live free, think free. You are free. Peace.
Can I ask you about love? They quote me a song. You've never looked at a woman and been totally vulnerable. Oh my God, put an angel on earth just for you. Could rescue you from the depths of hell. And you wouldn't know what it's like to be her angel.
Time to time, there arise among human beings people who seem to exude love as naturally as the sun gives out heat. People who exude love are apt to give things away. They are in every way like rivers, they stream. And so when they collect possessions and things that they like, they are apt to give them to other people, because if you ever notice that when you start giving things away, you keep getting more. In the same way as you empty out, you create a vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, and more flows in. Now, so the question and the puzzle remains. You cannot imitate this thing. There is no way of getting it, and yet it is absolutely essential that we have it. Because obviously, the human race is not going to flourish harmoniously unless we are enabled to love each other. But the question is, how do you get it? Is it something you simply have to contract like measles? Or is, as theologians say, is it a gift of divine grace, which somehow is dished out to some but not to others? And if there is no way of getting divine grace by anything you do, as the Calvinists aver, then we'd better just sit around and wait until something happens. Although Calvinists never did that. They were almost depressingly energetic. But surely we can't be left in that kind of a hopeless situation. There must be some way of getting the grace or getting divine charity or love, some sort of wangle, some sort of way in which we can, as it were, open ourselves so as to become conduit pipes for the flow.